Good morning, everyone. It's good to see everybody again. You know, the last month, a lot of things have happened. A lot of things have happened around COVID, it seems like. And, of course, we have Afghanistan, what's going on there, and global warming, and floods, and fires, and goodness, so much happening, so much suffering in the world right now. And I don't know about you, but I'm finding all of that rather stressful, and I'm feeling a little frayed at the edges about all of this. And then, of course, all of us have our own personal issues as well, health issues, relational issues, maybe money issues. Anyway, all the things that don't stop happening in our daily lives for to us as individuals. So this morning I would like to offer some thoughts about how we can use our Buddhist practice to work with these difficult times. So one thing about our teaching is the teaching that this is, as you've heard me talk about before, that this is the Buddha field, known as the Saha world, and that in this Buddha field there is a lot of suffering, which is why we have Bodhisattva practice. And in Theravada Buddhism, it is why they have the teaching of getting off the wheel of birth and death. And this teaching teaches us that things basically have always been this way, and that everything that we are experiencing has happened before and continues to happen in human existence. Except perhaps global warming, which I would say is our biggest existential threat as human beings at this point. So, with all of that in mind, how should we regard our situation? In Buddhism, we are encouraged to keep a perspective with a positive stance. And we do this by beginning to start from the place of accepting these things as happening. And despite the fact that we may want something else to be going on, that our willingness to say, okay, this is where we are. This is the situation. This is what's happening. Now, what do we do? Now, how do we use this and make this as the jumping off point of our response? And one of the teachings that we're taught is that the teaching of impermanence, and impermanence is immutable in Buddhism. We're taught that things are constantly changing and that we can't stop this process of change, this process of birth and death, renewal and destruction. It is what sustains us. Impermanence, what makes the world go round. Impermanence, which is what allows the muscles and the chemical reactions in our body so that we can move our arms, we can think, we can talk, so that there is birth and death. And at the same time, there is no birth and death. And so we rely on impermanence in order for life to function. And yet, in times of stress, it is this very impermanence that often causes our stress. Our life feels rocky, unknowable. Our plans are disrupted, and we feel that things are out of control. So, really, we don't like change that affects us negatively. We love change that affects us positively, but we're not so happy about the negative things. And that is what the Four Noble Truths tell us about the cause of our suffering. And as you recall, the Buddha presented the Four Noble Truths in his first turning of the wheel, his first talk. So, what are the causes of suffering? One, the first cause is getting what we don't want. So that would be sickness, war. We don't want to see other people suffer. We don't want to suffer. We don't want to witness unnecessary cruelty. We don't want to lose our job. We don't want to be broke. We don't want to get wet. We don't want to get cold. And we want the kind of flavor of ice cream that we want. So this range of suffering about getting things that we don't want goes from things that, you know, we can characterize as being extraordinarily serious to things that perhaps we might consider frivolous. And yet, frivolous or not, we experience suffering over some of the smallest things. The second cause of suffering is not getting what you do want. So maybe you didn't get a job that you wanted, or maybe your relationship didn't work out, or, you know, you want peace, but you're not getting peace. You want rest, but you're not getting rest. And, of course, you want a particular kind of ice cream, which you're not getting. So that's also a source of suffering. And then the third source of suffering that's outlined in the Four Noble Truths is not being seen. It's called the desire for rebecoming, which technically means this desire to experience continual rebirth, to continue to perpetuate the self. So we can take that as being not being seen the way others want to see you, or not being able to maintain or wanting to maintain, or being very attached to maintaining a self-image that you want to foster, wanting to maintain control over that. It also includes clinging to our delusions, even as they are the cause of our suffering, because we think that those delusions are going to make us happy, or those delusions are going to somehow define the nature of who we are. And so we engage in delusional behavior. So we want to grasp things, we want to get rid of things, and we want to continue our delusional life. And sometimes we can see this actually happening, and at other times we don't see it happening. And then add on top of that all the things that you cannot control, like COVID, like our government's decisions in Afghanistan, and it's kind of crazy-making. We get a little strung out. And so what do we do? You know, we want to control things. We might end up feeling unmoored in our life, powerless. And right now, as the world is unfolding around us, we might be feeling a little bit like the whole thing is coming apart and the ground of our sanity has become unsteady, fluid, like an earthquake. David Gergen on CNN characterized the situation in Afghanistan as losing control of the narrative. So I think that's a really apt way to describe how we may be feeling in our lives. We are losing control of the narrative. By the way, we probably never had control of the narrative, but this is one of these situations where it causes us to cling even more to our ideas of how we wish things were. So this is the scary part of recognizing impermanence in our lives. We see it is unpredictable, and we want things at this point to just settle down and stop. And yet they are not. COVID is constantly mutating. Things are unfolding in Afghanistan. You're hearing about people who are being flooded out of their homes, etc., etc., and not to mention our own personal issues. So I think that is a good, pretty good description of maybe some of the suffering that we're all experiencing right now. Now, the flip side of impermanence is interconnection. impermanence is change, brought about through causes and conditions, which are links and process of life's continuity or continuation. It is rising, life itself is rising and falling away. These processes are rising and falling away. And we are sustained by these connections. And these connections are everywhere. This is life itself. There is nothing else. It is the air we breathe. It's the food we eat. And it's the laughter that we share with each other. Despite COVID, a few days ago, I was giving a hug and receiving a hug from someone. And I was thinking about this lecture, thinking, well, what am I going to say about this? And I thought, oh, this connection with this other person, this brief connection, eases my mind. I thought, this is about connecting. This is about returning to interconnection. In some ways, it's about returning to Sangha. So one of the great joys about teaching at Ocean Gate, I think both Jaco and I share, is seeing the relationships and how you all support each other. And that is very wonderful to watch. So I'd like to talk about interconnection, what that looks like. Because if we can't find connection and compassion for ourselves and others, we cannot find a calm and peaceful mind. We cannot find wisdom to address these larger problems, our larger problems. So, as always, we always start at home. We always start with ourselves. We always start with our relationships with the beings and activities that populate our daily lives. So we want to cultivate relationships of our Sangha. And our Sangha can be our chosen family. Our Sangha can be, you know, any group of people that we see. It can be the folks who work as cashiers at the New Leaf where Jaco and I shop. And it can be somebody you just pass on the street. And of course, Sangha at Ocean Gate is specifically those of us who are members, who are here showing up, being with each other as Sangha. And that changes. This morning we are Sangha, and then maybe that changes over time. So we want to cultivate these relationships. However we define these groups, we want to cultivate something that is wholesome, something that is a source of renewal. I find when I go to the grocery store and I say good morning or good afternoon or whatever to the clerk and say, how are you today? How's work? You know, sometimes I say at the end of the day, I'll say to them, oh, maybe you're happy to be off work pretty soon. There's this way of connection with each other. You know, how are you? And sometimes people answer honestly, you know. There's a woman who we get water at H2O for you, which is on 41st Avenue. And the woman who runs it, Chris, one time I went in, I said, oh, how are you doing today, Chris? She said, well, I'm okay. And I said, well, I don't want to pry, but you look like you're kind of having a hard time. And she said, yeah, my best friend just died. And so we talked a little bit about that. And I think there's this feeling that generates from that where we feel that we're being supportive of each other. You don't have to make a big deal out of it, but that we acknowledge that we're all suffering. We acknowledge that we're all doing this thing together and that we have these shared experiences as human beings. So we want to cultivate these relationships. We want to cultivate our chosen family. And again, we want to find relationships that are wholesome and a source of renewal for us. So I would suggest that especially at this time in our lives, we focus on populating our world with an empathic community. So this is the sangha of people we interact with in our daily lives. Our pets, very important. The grocery store clerk, as I mentioned. Classmates, friends, family. And there's also the sangha of the Buddha Dharma, who populate our hearts and minds, who are our hearts and minds. Mark was talking about the Heart Sutra. He gave a very nice lecture last week talking about the Heart Sutra. He didn't talk so much about the characters who populate the Heart Sutra, but there's Prajnaparamita, Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha is present, Shakyamuni is present, and so is Ananda present. All the Bodhisattvas and the Buddhas, all the whole Sangha on Vulture Peak are present there in the Heart Sutra. And when we recite the Heart Sutra, we bring forth all of these Buddhas and ancestors throughout space and time, all of these Bodhisattvas who come and witness, as Dogen said in Uji, all the Devas to the right and left of us. They are all here with us. So there is this invisible assembly throughout space and time that are here supporting us, teaching us the Buddha Dharma. But there's also people who are alive today. Pema Chodron, who inspire us. Thich Nhat Hanh, who has been teaching for a very long time. All of those people, Buddhists, otherwise may not be Buddhists, some other kind of wise figure that we look to and read their quotes and are inspired by them. So those people too are there populating our lives as well and make up a sangha for us too. They inspire us, they encourage us, they motivate us to cultivate wisdom, kindness, and equanimity. So we're all sharing this common experience and lineage. Lineage is very important in Zen. We share this lineage of the Dharma. We stand on the shoulders of those who have come before. We listen to the teachings of our elders. So this community is a key to equanimity, I think. It's one of the primary practices that we can engage in. So to look for these ties, to cultivate these ties, to nurture kindness towards each other. And by the way, we're not going to always succeed because stress often brings out the worst of our character. Nevertheless, we want to continue to be kind towards each other as we make mistakes. So let us keep faith with each other in our effort and practice. That's part of Sangha too, is that we give each other room. Suzuki Roshi said, I give my students a big field to kind of bang around in. So let's do our best to be generous with each other. So this renewal, this search for equanimity, a way to kind of calm and ground ourselves in our life, can also be found in more solitary activities, such as maybe learning a language, playing or listening to music, sitting in nature, meditating, surfing. Although, according to Ron, surfing is not really a solitary activity. He's out there with all of his buddies. But activities that ground us, that reading, that bring us some solitude, some ease. But even these activities that I'm characterizing as being more solitary, those are about relationship as well. We stop, we remember, we rejoin what is sustaining and brings ease. When you read a book, it is relational. It is relational with the author, with everyone who's ever read the book. It's relational with the characters. When you sit in nature, go out in your backyard or take a hike, even if you're by yourself, it's very much a relational activity because everything is interconnected. So from a more formal point of view, perhaps you recite and remember a line from the Universal Gateway. You know, this has been a really important sutra for Randy, and she's been talking about this in the last while we were gone too as well, about the meaning of the Lotus Sutra and Avalokiteshvara and the meaning of the Universal Gateway. So we are taking refuge in Bodhisattva vow. This Bodhisattva vow is a vow of interconnection. It's about our relationships with others. It's transformative. Because really, what else can we do? Do we throw up our hands and say, forget it, I've had it? Maybe we do that for a few minutes, for a few hours, go off and say, I can't watch TV anymore. I can't do this. It's just making me too crazy. And that I think that's good. To put ourselves on a little bit of a diet and say, this is really stressing me out, and that's not helpful. So I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to read the paper today. Because it will be there. It will be there. So what do we do? What else do we do but be bodhisattvas? What else do we do but make our best effort to follow the bodhisattva vow? And I would say that we personalize that vow. I paraphrase this vow to say, I benefit all beings, starting with the people I meet in my daily life. I vow to cultivate liberation and open my wisdom eye. I vow to face and enter my life in order to help myself and others. I vow to engage in my life, be inspired by my life, by the Buddhist path and the teachings of the Dharma, and through concert with others who are making this effort as well. So we may feel overwhelmed right now and not in control of our narrative. Maybe we feel short on empathy, or maybe we just feel completely overwhelmed by our empathy. We may be stressed and we feel we are afflicted with all that seems like our own worst qualities. Yet we continue to strive to keep our heads above water, to make it to the other shore, even if we have to dog paddle the whole way. We are still making this effort. So, you and I, we may not have the direct ability to save the women of Afghanistan, to save the people who have been working for the United States. And we may struggle with this, with our frustration and our anger and our sadness and our grief. And we grapple with understanding how to live in intimacy with each other in the midst of COVID, which is an infectious disease. And we may need to rally ourselves to face global warming and not be completely defeated by it, and to help those who are afflicted by wildfires, flooding, and all the things happening on this earth. And we can think of ways to do that. We use less water. If we can afford it, we send money to various organizations. We try to come up with ways we can demonstrate. Anyway, we try to come up with ways that we feel like, yes, this activity I'm doing truly is going to make a difference. I can't go out there and wave a magic wand. I can't call Joe Biden on the phone and say, Joe, I thought you were Mr. Empathy. What in the hell are you up to? I can't do that. Neither can any one of you. If you can, let me know. I'd love to give you my ideas. You can pass them on. But for the most part, we don't have that ability. So we have to come up with other ways to feel like what we're doing is efficacious. And I think by doing that, we feel less hopeless. So I think that the way that we do this is that we do not lose sight of the fact that we are all in this together, that we are all authors of this story. So we have to do what we can within the context of our own life's circumstances. So I suggest that we work to find ways to create a supportive community. I think in the midst of our own imperfections, and I think that Ocean Gate, I hope that Ocean Gate and what I see around me in the Sangha with all of your relationships with each other is wholesome and supportive. And I applaud you for that. It's very heartening to see. So I think that this is how that we find equanimity and acceptance in the face of this impermanence. Things are going awry and we can't fight it, really. Nevertheless, we are in the arena. We must stay in the we must stay in the arena, and our actions have an impact. And we help each other. So humanity is going to fight. We are going to be cruel. We will die, become sick, lose the ones we love. And at the same time, in the midst of that, and perhaps because of all of that, we have the capacity to find love, the capacity to make community, the capacity for continuity, and the capacity to take solace in our own good deeds and the goodness of others. So as we, I think, returning to this notion of community is a way that we can help alleviate our suffering. So we can return to community, we can laugh with each other, we can take naps. I think taking naps is a good way. Go home, take a nap. We experiment with ways to heal, and we thrive, and we make our best effort to maintain our sanity in the midst of all of this. And ultimately, I feel like this is a way of expressing the three treasures: Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Thank you very much.